Hello and welcome back to We the People, your favorite weekly Nintendo podcast. My name is Michael of Cotrello Games. I'm here with Matthew, and we're about to get into another week of Nintendo news. Matthew, what's going on with you? You okay?
I'm okay.
You alive?
I'm
breathing?
I'm alive. Barely. I'm dead on the inside, though, because there hasn't been a new Donkey Kong game announcement yet, so...
Keep holding your breath, Matthew. It's happening soon.
Yeah, just... hold my breath.
Her face is a mix of purple, blue, and red now. I just had a nice little cappuccino, feeling ready to go. Not a huge week in Nintendo news, but let's jump right into it. So, our first news story isn't directly about Nintendo, but definitely concerns them, as the judge proceeding over Epic versus Apple claims that the case will have an impact on other game ecosystems like Xbox, PlayStation, and Nintendo. This report comes from the good lads over at Video Games Chronicle, and man, you had to expect this, and so I feel like that's why Nintendo's been very quiet about this thing. You know, Microsoft has previously come out in support of the of Epic's argument with Apple, probably more to do with Microsoft being blocked from offering xCloud on iOS devices than anything else. But Nintendo's been silent because, I mean, they got to see this coming, that if this case goes Epic's way and they decide that, you know, other brands need to be able to have their own stores on the App Store or be able to negotiate the terms of the agreements, then that's going to make its way to the eShop as well.
Yeah, I mean, but I mean, what, how does the eShop set up as far as like what percentage goes to? Because I mean, the way it works on Apple is a little different, isn't it? Like, as far as how what percentage Apple gets from game, like, so from what I understand, doesn't Apple get a 30% cut of everything that's purchased on the eShop, or not the eShop, the App Store, that's in relation to games on the App Store?
Yes, and it's exactly the same on the Nintendo eShop. So I guess a little preamble might help. The way that it works on the App Store and where this whole lawsuit started was that Apple just wants a clean 30% from every game operating on the App Store. They do this for every app on the App Store as well, but they've got a bunch of like deals with people. Like, they let Disney break the rules, they let Amazon break the rules, Uber doesn't have to pay as much as games do, and so Epic wants to be able to sell their skins and their battle passes at a better margin, and so they've come up with this whole marketing campaign, free Fortnite, cut a commercial, sued Apple and Google, and they're going after this where they want to change that. Now, in the games industry, 30% is pretty standard. I don't think nobody outside of the Epic Game Store that's offered on PC ever has, like, messed around with those numbers. Steam, to a certain extent, has, but they've got a whole different, like, tiered system for the amount of game sales and so on and so forth. But as far as consoles go, Xbox, PlayStation, Nintendo, 30% off the top all the time. That's why they love when you shop digital, because they don't have to share as much with all the manufacturing partners, the shipping partners, the retail stores. But yeah, every Nintendo, every game sold on a Nintendo store, every piece of DLC you buy, 30% of that is going back to Nintendo itself. And at the App Store works the same way for Apple. Now, what game consoles are going to eventually argue is that they're different from phones. They're different from phones because you plug them into a TV and you use that to access Netflix and the internet and games instead of it being in your pocket.
Well, But you also don't use a game console to make phone calls or, you know, so there are other differences between smartphones and video game consoles.
Yeah, but I mean, honestly, I do, like, to the effect that someone would be able to start their own shop on the Switch, that you'd be have the Epic Game Shop and the EA Store, I don't think anybody really wants that. And so I don't think that particular feature is going to happen, but I think, honestly, what I think is going to happen here is that this is going to go on for years, and eventually Epic is going to work out a better deal for itself, and nothing else will change. But we will see. We will see.
Well, I mean, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I was just going to say, like, this is the only thing that I've never liked about this. As much as I think it's a crummy deal that Apple and these other companies get a 30% cut of you selling a game on their store, even though they're essentially just allowing you to sell it on there. To get 30% of that is just, it's crummy to me, because that's a big percentage of the sales you're going to get from that product. However, I think it's silly on Epic's part that they can just decide, you know what, screw this, we're just going to start selling our stuff at a cheaper price, and we're going to stop giving 30% to Apple, just out of nowhere, even though they signed an agreement to be able to sell Fortnite on the App Store in the first place. And that's just the part that I don't like, is I don't like the idea of somebody that you're you're contractually obligated to an agreement, and then all of a sudden you're just like, to heck with that agreement, you know, I'm just going to start doing it my way. And that's why, honestly, I'd be really shocked, and I'd be honestly disappointed if a judge did rule in favor of Epic in this scenario, because I think that whole binding agreement has to mean something. And even if you want to make this argument that it's a terrible deal or it's unfair, at the end of the day, you signed up for that. So you can't be mad at Apple, as bad of a deal as it is, you know, that all of a sudden they don't want to honor the fact that you're breaching your contract with them. So that's just what I don't like about it. I think that's just very unethical on Epic's part. And, you know, if this were to affect how other people run their, you know, like Nintendo runs the eShop and PlayStation runs the PlayStation Store and so on and so forth, I think that would set a really awful precedent going forward.
Yeah, well, what they did in that is they wanted Apple to retaliate in some fashion. And so they got what they asked for, and they can try and spin that in the public domain as, look at big mean Apple, you know, putting Fortnite in jail and printing free Fortnite hats and cutting commercials. And that's all corny. And Epic is not a hero. They're just in this for a little more profit margin. And if that means that they create extra profit margin for other developers, cool. If it means that they don't, then they're fine with that as well. There's actually emails from between Epic and Apple where they're basically just asking for a lower rate, like, you know, the likes of Amazon has gotten with stuff like Audible and Prime and different things like that. Where, you know, Apple has different deals with a bunch of different people. And that's the part where I think Epic's probably got a case, is that games themselves are singled out as the cash cow and they just, you know, harvest 30% of everything on the App Store. But it'll be interesting for consoles, because that, you know, this is a business to business sort of thing. But one of the reasons that game makers like, you know, the PlayStation, really every console, it has very, very, very small profit margins. A lot of consoles are even sold at a loss, because the publishers know that they're going to make that money on the back end by holding a platform and getting 30% of everybody else's digital sales, a percentage of everybody else's physical sales, and they're going to be able to sell some of their own games on there. But you know, if this really shook the games industry up and ate into that percentage, then game console prices might rise in a response to it. Although, you know, I think doing that would be troublesome, and there's still going to be heavy competition in game system pricing. But yeah, all that to say, it's going to be interesting to see how it all shakes up. I think 30% is kind of a silly cut. I mean, I definitely know that the platform holders such as Apple, Google, Nintendo, Xbox, they built that gigantic audience that these people are trying to get access to sell their games to. But it's a give and take. It's a two-way street. And, you know, we all know from the Wii U that if you don't have people making games for your system, nobody's interested in your system. And so you need both. And so I think 30% is a little, it's a little iffy. And I think the first developer to really, you know, challenge that or create some better deals is going to see a gigantic surge in third-party support. I think that would be a really like a big power play move from someone like Sony or Microsoft. Nintendo will never do it.
But even yeah. Then, you said Epic might have an argument because they had open dialogue with Apple about this issue. But even then, I mean, that to me, that's still, I still can't see the judge ruling in Epic's favor, because even though they had an open conversation about it, at the end of the day, that's the deal Epic took to be on the App Store in the first place. And so, sure, they can have that conversation, but if Apple says no, it's like you're still bound by that contract that you signed. So I just, that's what I just don't agree with, is even though Amazon got a better deal, it's what essentially probably happened with Amazon is they probably had the same type of conversation and Apple said yes. In this case, it sounds like they said no. And I just, to me, this is basically setting a precedent where it's like, oh, you don't get an answer that you like, so then you just take your ball and go home. And, you know, because all in all, I just don't like what Epic's trying to do. And you know me, I'm no apologist for Apple. I think they do a lot of crummy things. But I just think in this particular instance, I would be very disappointed if a judge ruled in Epic's favor and what that would mean for the games marketplace. Because like well, you said, it might put more money in developers' hands, but you know, that might cause console makers to raise the prices of consoles, and then all of a sudden it just creates this standoff that I'm not really looking forward to seeing happening, I guess.
Yeah, well, the argument isn't so much, you know, is the contract fair? It is the case that's in court is Apple a monopoly power on the iPhone and using that monopolistic power unjustly? And so that's the argument that they're gonna make. And obviously, this is going to take place over the next few years, and we'll see how it shakes out. But yeah, I mean, my personal take on it is I don't really, you know, they're just too... two really rich and powerful corporations arguing about profit margins, and you know the rest of us are going to be shaken up in the wake of it. And either we're going to be paying more money for games or more money for consoles or something in between. But you know, it's we'll see how it shakes out, and if it affects Nintendo. I mean, Nintendo has a better argument for you know, being a platform holder than a smartphone, because a smartphone is starting to be seen as more of like a personal computing device. And you notice that these sort of ecosystems are not as closed off. You know, even on the Mac, there can be an Epic Game Store or a different app store. You can download software from a website, but you can't do that from a phone. You can't do that from a Switch. And so it'll be interesting to see where a lot of those fall into the category, because the Switch is closer to a mobile device than it is to a console in some respects. And so that's going to be interesting to see. All right, let's move on to our next story. We got Pikmin 3 having a sort of software teardown over at VG Tech on YouTube. They found that Pikmin 3 is going to be running at 720p docked, which suggests a lack of visual upgrade for the Switch version, and then it's going to run at 576p for handheld, which is slightly higher than the 480p resolution that the Wii U gamepad had the game at. I imagine that that they just wanted to get the co-op stuff working. I don't think you couldn't play that game in two-player through the campaign, could you?
No.
Okay, so yeah, that's a new feature, and I imagine that's probably where they're making their performance enhancements work for that. Split screen is actually a really hard thing to pull off in games, and it's why you'll usually see a dip in frame rate when it happens. Like, I think is it with two players or three that Mario Kart will have its frame rate? One of those transitions where you start to do split screen, it cuts the frame rate in half.
Yeah, it's when you do three or four player split screen. Two player split screen is okay.
Yeah, I was just kind of surprised that Pikmin 3 always ran at 720p, and I guess that's why the rocks and stuff look a little off. It's weird because the game is so pretty, but also visually unimpressive at the same time. Depending on like which textures you're looking at, it's really kind of strange.
Yeah, but it's just, I mean, but this is the disappointing part to me with some of these ports, though, is like if you're going to release the same game, at least add more to it than what they're adding. I mean, I think the addition of co-op, that's a big deal, and I'm looking forward to playing that again with you because of that feature. But beyond that, I mean, what are you really getting out of this that justifies buying a game that I already bought, mind you, for $60 when it first came out, and now I'm supposed to buy it again for $60 on the Switch? And I know that they're probably not targeting me as a consumer, somebody who already bought the game, but you would think that there would just be something done to it more, like maybe bumping it up to 1080p. I don't know. That's just, it's a little disappointing. It kind of reeks of the whole Super Mario All-Stars breakdown when you find out that Super Mario 64 is not in widescreen, and, you know, Super Mario Sunshine can't even change the text dialogue to, you know, say the buttons that you need to press with the Switch Pro controller, and you can't use the GameCube controller, all that stuff, you know. So it's just, this is more disappointing news as far as another port that I wasn't exactly asking for, but I am glad that this game is getting a second chance, because it is a great game.
Yeah, well, let me ask you a question then. Would you prefer a visual upgrade or the split screen co-op through the story mode?
That's tough.
Maybe a choice between the two. I mean, they could have done both, conceivably. I mean, they could have made it run at 1080p and then switch to 720p when you went split screen. So that might also be kind of like a false choice. But that's what's all the more interesting about them trying to, you know, pull that little sneaky move and get it off of the Wii U eShop. Because the Wii U version, after all is said and done, if you're looking to get into the single player, the Wii U might still be better. Because they had that handy map on the bottom screen. There was a lot that you could do with the Wii U gamepad. And so, I mean, honestly, after it's all said and done, that still might be the best version of the game. We'll have to see and do some comparisons, but yeah, that's just what's kind of funny, is that it's like this version's not necessarily going to be better, but just different. I like that they're adding the side missions with Captain Olimar too, but whenever you hear that, you're like, okay, but how much content are we talking about? Because we also got Odyssey levels in Captain Toad, and you could beat it within, like, 9 minutes. So, you know, how much content are we talking here, guys?
Well, and that's my fear. That's what I personally feel like. It's not going to be anything substantial to warrant the $60 price tag, and because I don't feel like many of these boards have warranted a $60 price tag, but I don't know. I mean, like I said, if it's something that's substantial, I'll be happy about that. But you would think even with split screen, you would think that there could be some sort of enhancements that they'd be able to make. Because the Switch is more powerful than the Wii U, isn't it?
Not much more, I don't think. Because, I mean, it's still running at relatively the same resolutions. But the thing with the gamepad is that the way that the gamepad worked, I think, also took some resources away from the main screen, which is why some games opted to just, you know, axe the gamepad concept entirely, like Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze. My guess is that when they tried to do stuff with the gamepad and the main screen, that they couldn't get that clean 60 frames a second in visual fidelity that they were looking for, which I'm surprised that Nintendo let them do that, because they shoved gamepad functionality into everywhere it didn't belong, the worst case being Star Fox Zero. So, I don't know. It's interesting. You're getting a slightly better resolution for handheld, so that's cool. it's a much better handheld Pikmin than Hey Pikmin.
Yeah, I mean,
so there is that. All right. Well, Nintendo has permanently lowered the price of single Joy-Cons for the Japanese market, and this is was found on Nintendo's website, where they did a very slight discount that's going to be permanent on these units, which is interesting timing with both the ongoing Joy-Con lawsuits and the standalone Joy-Con patent that was registered in April. Do we make anything of this, or is this just a random thing that they're doing in Japan and we'll never do anywhere else?
Oh, no, I think that, come on, okay, so you and I have been Nintendo fans since we can remember. I mean, we have had, like, every console, I think, except the original NES. You know, like, the point is, we love Nintendo, we eat, sleep, and breathe it. When have you known Nintendo to ever discount literally anything?
During the Wii U and never anytime else.
But even then, yeah. What did they really substantially discount?
Some games.
Right,
but,
I mean, but
yeah, not any hardware.
Right, and so I just, look, If anybody thinks this is just a coincidence, I think you're being extremely naive. I think this is all a response to, you know, the ongoing litigation surrounding the lawsuit surrounding the Joy-Con problem. And I think this is them trying to build some good faith and just saying that, like, oh, this hasn't inconvenienced anybody, was their original argument. And now they're probably going to say, well, now we're selling it at a cheaper cost to mitigate some of the inconvenience that people have had as a result of them not working. But I don't, to think that Nintendo's just going to, you know, slash the price for an accessory for what's on pace to be the best-selling console of all time, when, the Wii U is one of the worst selling consoles of all time, and they barely discounted anything for that. So yeah, I think this is 100% because of what's going on with the lawsuit.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I haven't heard of anything like this happening in Japan itself. They might be kind of locked from, you know, if they were to lower the price worldwide during a class action lawsuit that looks guilty. And so maybe, you know, maybe they don't want to do that worldwide. And even, I don't know what to make of it, honestly, because, yeah, Nintendo's not really keen on discounting things for sure. But also, you know, if they wanted to, like, whatever they do is going to be hyper analyzed at this point, and you know, they kind of put themselves in this little boo-boo because they could have just been, you know, working on fixing the Joy-Con sometime over these past few years, but here we are. So may your Joy-Cons drift ever so slightly, always. All right, well, so I guess we got one more little news story. And then we'll talk over our experience with the new Smash DLC. So, and then, you know, we can just mention that Mario Kart is coming out the day of this podcast posting, the live home circuit. I don't know if I'm going to get it. It's kind of a big purchase commitment, and it's nobody's birthday or Christmas. So I might get one around Christmas time for the kids if it seems fun, but I'm not going to pick it up at the moment. So we probably won't have any impressions for you, but you know, you can find that stuff on the YouTubes or the tweeters. And you know, if it's good enough, maybe we'll go pick it up. You have any interest in this?
The Mario Kart live circuit? No, not really.
Yeah,
it looks like it could be interesting enough, like for a family environment type of thing. But for me personally, I'm not really interested in it.
I love that Nintendo is continuing to expand on what the Switch does. I will say that much, that, you know, I was playing Ring Fit today. I'm on my, I just completed the 23rd day of working out with that game. And honestly, man, I'm sore for days after some of those workouts. It's really helping me get in a cool routine of working out, especially when, you know, I have a gym in my building, but it's incredibly small. So, you know, during the germ apocalypse, it's not really like, you know, I'm always like going in there, someone else is there, do they want me to wear a mask? Is it okay that I'm not? I can't breathe while I'm wearing a mask because I'm a big boy with asthma, and there's just all these complications to going to a gym. And so that's really been helpful. And, you know, Ring Fit is just such a wacky idea. You slap the Joy-Cons onto this, like, elastic ring, and then you strap another Joy-Con to your leg, and then it uses gyro and pressure sensitivity and the IR function. It can check your blood pressure. It helps you work out, and the workouts that they come up with are actually pretty strenuous. But I was looking around at that, and I have the Labo in my cabinets as well. All that stuff is really fun and really stretching the idea of what a console could be in a good way. You know, the way that they used to try and stretch this is like, hey, you want to watch the NFL game on your Xbox? No. What? Like, who needs that? What? Like, I want to control the game with my game controller. It's like, I really like what Nintendo's doing this generation to expand what games can be. And Mario Kart Live could be a fun way to play around with my kids. And that's typically been my experience with a lot of this stuff is like, Labo is a cool science experiment. It's really, really cool when you are doing it with kids. So yeah, we'll maybe I'll eventually get that. We'll just have to see if the stars align with probably Christmas, because then, you know, birthdays have already passed. And, you know, Papa can't be bringing home these random gifts, so they're going to start being expected. And it's kind of expensive.
Yeah.
I think it's running at like $100.
Yikes.
Yeah, which, like, I get it. It's, you know, you got to have an RC car with a camera, and then they have to account for the price of the software and all that stuff. So, you know, it's, I get it, but yeah, I think, actually, I think it may be $150, or is that just the scalping price? Man, Nintendo and scalpers have been, you know, arm in arm this year. They've been on a roll, man.
They're a match made in heaven, apparently.
Yep. Yeah, those people are selling on eBay for $160, but I don't think that's the MSRP. Don't think so. All right, well, let's move on to this last news story before we talk about Steve arriving in the world of Smash. So we've got Metroid Prime 4 job ads mentioning cinematic and emotional moments, suggesting a focus on narrative for the upcoming game. This comes from WCCF Tech. I think I got that right. It's the first time I've ever been to their website, but they have spotted a job listing for a storyboard artist to help with elements of like that. Matthew, as someone who has actually played this series, what do you make of this?
I think it sounds really cool, to be honest. I just hope we don't get the same fan reaction that happened with Metroid Other M, which I get it. Metroid Other M's story was pretty awful, and the dialogue and the voice acting was all just really bad, even though there was a really fun game there buried underneath all that mess. But, the only worry that I have is that the Metroid Other M reaction, I'm only worried about that. Like, and I know that game was a mess, but it seems like fans are very, very particular and nitpicky about how Samus is supposed to be portrayed as a character if she were to have dialogue and emotion and this, that, and the other. And that's the thing I'm worried about, is unless they nail it the way that everybody has, you know, this very nitpicky way of looking at it, then I just think it's going to be another Metroid Other M situation where people are going to be really unhappy with it. But I think it's cool that they're trying to evolve the series, because one thing about Metroid Prime that's so interesting is that there's so much lore buried underneath that game. Like, you know, the whole scanning method that you have in that series, I know you haven't really played it like that, but you can scan pretty much anything you see in the world. Like, you can scan pieces of technology, you can scan corpses of aliens or deceased humans, you can scan all sorts of different things, and they give you information. Like sometimes you'll scan a dead alien in the second game, and it'll give you like a diary entry of what they were going through while they were in this war and what happened before they met their end. And I just think stuff like that is so interesting, and there's so much that can be explored with more of a narrative in that game series. So, I'm excited to see what they do with it.
Yeah, I remember the backlash with Other M, and I kind of share in that a little bit, where the way that they portrayed Samus doesn't seem on brand for her, but Nintendo's never done they've never done the work of voice casting her and so on and so forth. And I do aptly believe in their ability to mess it up. I think the reason that Link doesn't talk in the games, it started as this way of like imprinting yourself on the character, and nowadays they're like, if we gave a Link a voice, we'd ruin him, just like we did in the Philips CDI and just like we did in the cartoon, where it's, excuse me, princess, how about a kiss? Where just like, he's awful. Every time he's talked, it's turned out badly, and I think that's why most Nintendo's characters don't talk, although Miyamoto said at one point that it's a way for you to imprint yourself on the character, and sure. It also means that you don't have to do the trouble of voice casting or writing lines for
exactly
anything like that. And it's just I think that I could see them not voicing Samus at all, but I think it's totally possible. And I mean, honestly, I think the biggest thing with Other M is that it seemed to betray what people's understanding of Samus was. And I think I'd agree with that. I think with most of the games, even just with the small amount of storytelling that we get and environmental storytelling, the chat logs that she would have, she sounds tougher than she came off in Other M. And I think if they just kind of mirrored that, it's a pretty low bar to clear. But, you know, who knows if they'll even add full voicing to the game.
Yeah, but I mean,
it'd be cool to have a more cinematic Metroid. I mean, that's what Prime is.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise, why are we making a first-person Metroid? Let's go back to the side-scrollers, please.
Well, the irony of the story of Metroid Other M and feeling like a betrayal is that the story came from Nintendo. The funny thing is, I believe it was Team Ninja that developed the game, but they only were responsible for the gameplay. Nintendo handled all of the story elements of that game and all of the cutscenes and the dialogue, and I think it's really funny that You know, Team Ninja almost got looked at as like they didn't understand the source material. And it's like, no, Nintendo's the one that did that. So for all you know, the fans have been wrong about what they've expected from Samus's character all these years. I mean, maybe that was Nintendo's vision of Samus, and that's what we got in Other M, and then people didn't like it. And like you said, maybe that's why Link has never talked, because maybe what we've come to expect Link to be, it would be disappointing if we found out what the creator of Zelda actually wanted Link to be.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the writer for Other M was a Nintendo guy. I mean, he's a longtime Nintendo employee who's been on Nintendo projects since Donkey Kong Jr. So yeah, it came from him. And so, yeah, I mean, that's also the other possibility, is that that's who Samus was always meant to be. He's just a scared lady in a suit. But yeah, that's just kind of weird. And yeah, at this point, it's almost as if the character has taken on its own identity. And that's the complicated thing with adding a voice or anything to these characters, and why, you know, I wonder, there's these rumors of a Netflix Zelda adaption. And, you know, are they going to make Link talk, and is that going to be an absolute disaster? I mean, low bar to clear, honestly, too. Like, Link has never had a character, so just do something that's not immensely repulsive, and you'll be all right. But I don't know. But yeah, the guy who wrote Other M was the director of Super Metroid, so, you know, maybe that's just who Samus is now.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying, is that I'm pretty sure the writer for Other M worked on other Metroid games before.
Yeah, that's what I was just saying. He was the game director for Super Metroid.
Right.
And that's a pretty big role, is the director inside of the games. I mean, Zero Mission. He directed, he was a chief director for Metroid Fusion, scenario writer. He did the story for that one. So yeah, I don't know, man, maybe. And also, maybe it just didn't really translate well. Nintendo used to be notoriously terrible at adapting Japanese work to the American audience, and translation from the two languages can be really hard. And so maybe it was just a bad translation process. I mean, Square Enix has also gotten a lot better at that, but back in Final Fantasy 13, I believe it was, that was one of the first times they really invested in an English voice cast, and they kept asking these people to make like enunciations that don't make sense outside of the Japanese language. So they tried to, they had a Japanese voice director directing English voice actors to make Japanese-ish sounds and mannerisms in English. And it just doesn't really work. But nowadays it's a lot better with, like, you know, you see Final Fantasy VII Remake went over really well with the voice casting, but I don't know, man. I don't know. I have no expectations for Metroid Prime 4. I could see it being a trash fire, and I could see it being a masterpiece, but I'm actually pretty doubtful of the masterpiece end of it.
No, I mean, I think everything Retroid Studios has done has been a very, very good game, so I expect it to at least be really fun.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, the pedigree of Retro, I mean, they have not made a stinker in their partnership with Nintendo, and even the games that they've helped on. I mean, the track that they made for Mario Kart 7, my goodness. Now, somewhere in there, it sounds like they had a canceled project, so they're capable of making a stinker. And even if that project didn't get canceled, whatever they've been doing, they haven't really, you know, been able to release much in the past, like, half decade. And so, I mean, I don't know. That's where I could see this being a bit of a disaster. But it seems like Nintendo's not going to let it be one. Maybe they want Metroid to be one of those tentpole franchises that could see its way making its way into, like, multimedia and stuff. I think, honestly, Metroid has a lot of potential for that. You know, movie spinoff, TV show spinoff, a lot of merchandise stuff. Like, Metroid could be huge. People love space.
Yeah, I completely agree. I've always thought it's one of their stronger candidates for, you know, adapting it into a television series or a movie. You know, just because also it's like Star Fox could probably work too, but it would look ridiculous having like CGI animals, you know, whereas, you know, Metroid is just someone in a suit, you know, and then.
Yeah, that'd be a good like extra podcast to do one day to do, talk about what Nintendo TV or film adaptions we'd like to see. Because I would personally like to see a Star Fox movie or TV show done in the style of the Fantastic Mr. Fox. Not because that other movie had a fox in it, but like it's like stop motion toy animated stuff, which was kind of the style of the original SNES Star Fox, or at least the box art. They kind of looked like they looked fuzzy and they looked like puppet toys. I would love something like that.
See, I think if they did a Star Fox television show series that was like the anime thing that they made before Star Fox Zero came out, I think something like that could work. But I'm talking about if you're talking like a real life setting, I think Metroid, out of all of Nintendo's franchises, has the most potential to be something interesting and compelling. You know, I wouldn't have much expectation for Zelda because, like you said, Link's never talked, and I just don't... Like, honestly, I think it's ridiculous that they've never tried to give Link a personality, because it's like, I just can't imagine you're that afraid to develop your character. I mean, like, how do you have that little confidence in just developing a character that you created into something interesting? But I just think, because of that, like, I have no idea what to expect from Link. But Zelda's another one that could make an interesting television or movie series, but I think Metroid definitely has the most potential.
Yeah. Yeah, especially because they, I mean, which, you know, if they did something like this, they would just get writers that are in the film or television industry to recontextualize these characters, just like they did for the Sonic movie that went over pretty well, and just like they did for Pokemon. But yeah, and I've never really been impressed with the voice direction and all of that was used in Breath of the Wild. All the characters are just pretty flat, and that's why, you know, I think to that effect, I don't think that the War of Calamity game is going to be super impressive on the story side, because there's not much depth there.
You mean, you know, Age, I think, of Calamity,
whatever it's called, man, the Zelda Dynasty Warriors 2. But yeah, I think that what was interesting to me is after finishing Breath of the Wild and Mario Odyssey, I honestly think the stronger female lead was Princess Peach, which says a lot about just the Zelda thing. It's just, I don't know, man. Anyway, enough of that. Metroid Prime 4 coming soon to a Nintendo Switch near you sometime between now and 2026. That's the last day I think it might come out. But I don't know, maybe Metroid Prime, here's a theory. Get your tinfoil hats on, gamers. Metroid Prime 4 is going to launch alongside the Nintendo Switch Pro and be a Nintendo Switch Pro enabled game that runs at 4K with the space graphics. That's my prediction.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly believe that if they weren't still hiring for more people to help them out with different aspects of the game, because that...
Well, but that's what I'm talking about. That tells us that it's at least a year, maybe 3 years out, and, you know, they put it on a more beefed-up Switch console to, you know, drum up some extra excitement for both Metroid and the new system. I don't know. It could be something.
Yeah, but the next system is rumored for this upcoming March.
Yeah, well, we'll see. It'll be interesting to see how this all shakes out, because the Nintendo Switch kind of, you know, started mid-console cycle because the Wii U was such a disaster, and so I have no idea where they're going to go from here, but I think it's safe to say for the next, like, 15 years, we're just getting Switches, which I'm okay with. I love the Switch, and I would like another one, please. All right, so... Now that we're through the news, we have had the chance to play with the Minecraft DLC that came to Smash. We did a Let's Play of it that I will link somewhere in the description if you want to check it out. And had the chance to play some four-player free-for-alls. We did the spirit battles, did some team battles with both Steve and the new costumes that came along. Matthew, what do you think about Minecraft Steve coming to Smash?
I mean... Still just kind of indifferent about it. I mean, seeing him play in the game, it's I don't really like the fact that they didn't try to make him blend in at all. Like, it's almost like they pulled the model from the Minecraft game and left everything looking exactly the way that it looks in there, which I understand that's kind of the appeal of Minecraft to an extent, but, you know, you would think you would leave you know, the hero character from Dragon Quest cel-shaded still, if that was the case, because it's always been like an anime-style character. So I wish they would have like blended it to blend in just a little more, but so I feel the same way about his inclusion and seeing him in the game, and you know, it's, it hasn't really changed my thoughts on it. I can say he's kind of annoying to fight. I can't tell if he's like extremely broken or not very good at all. It seems like it's a mix of the two, depending on what character you're playing against him with. But you know, he's he can be pretty annoying to fight, but I think that's also because I just haven't had time to like learn all of his attacks and counterplay, you know, measures to take and everything like that. But so far, I mean, I'm, like I said before, I'm just glad it's not another character like Joker or anything like that. But you know, but I feel the same way I felt even before having actually seen him in the game.
Yeah, put that butter knife away, Joker. The diamond sword is coming through. I really like Steve's inclusion in the game. It's grown on me as time has gone by. The visual distinction between him and the other characters is weird, and not like in a charming Mr. Game & Watch way. It just looks weird because yeah, they really did just pull the direct style of Minecraft and not change it at all and put it in the game, which I imagine was something that they probably went back and forth on. And it's interesting that the character's taken this long to get into Smash when the talks of including him started before Ultimate was even announced. And so that tells me that there's probably a lot of things to hash out in terms of rights to the character, the music, all that stuff. You also notice that they don't use any music from the actual Minecraft game. It's music from Minecraft Earth and Minecraft Dungeons. And the reason I'm guessing for that is that the original Minecraft music was composed by an artist in Sweden, and I'm guessing that he wanted more money now that Minecraft is owned by one of the richest corporations in the world to, you know, get him to do more work and do music in other places. And music rights can be very, very interesting. I mean, the Sonic franchise has also had a very storied history with music rights. I mean, Sega didn't own the rights to Green Hill Zone for the longest time, and every time they used it, they had to, you know, get the original artist's permission to use the composition. Eventually, they worked something out, but nowadays, with how games work, you know, it's like the company owns the compositions, and it's kind of a different thing. So it's weird to not have Minecraft music when we have everything else. And I imagine that's also the reason that Steve looks exactly like he does in Minecraft. I'm guessing that's just like a branding thing that they were not willing to budge on. But that being said, very fun character. The way they adapt Minecraft as a game to his moveset is awesome. I mean, I love everything from the way that he uses the flint to use fire, the way that the anvil comes crashing down, the crafting system. It's just simple enough and has just the right amount of depth at the same time to really invite you to learn the character. You know, you, based on what part of the stage you're mining on, or even what kind of stage you're on, you'll get different sorts of elements. Like if you're on that Toon Link level, that's the wooden ship, you'll get more wood. Or if you're on the dirt blocks in Minecraft, you'll get a lot more dirt than if you go to the iron block on the Minecraft stage. You'll have a better chance of getting iron. And you want to keep track of all these different supplies that you have so that you can, you know, the minecart move requires iron. But then if you want the minecart to move faster, you also need redstone. And then if you want to continue attacking, then you need to constantly harvest new material because your sword and your pickaxe will break. And what's interesting about that is, like, when your pickaxe breaks and then you go to do another forward air, it's just Steve swinging his hand. But you've still got your sword. So if you use different attacks, your moveset kind of, like, gets whittled down to where you can't use certain moves until you craft another weapon. And so that does create a lot of interesting scenarios, although a lot of times, like, what that means is that the optimal way to play Steve is to hold down the B button on one side of the stage and then wait for people to come and attack you. And so the matchups, yeah, I mean, depending on which character you are, if you don't have any projectiles, Steve is going to give you a lot of trouble. He's going to be very annoying. He's going to make you want to eat your controller. Especially because the minecart move not only can be used as a KO move, whether it has redstone or not, but it can also grab you. And he's just got a ton of tools. Mix that with him being quite possibly the best edgeguarding character in the entire game. And yeah, you got something interesting here, but I can't tell if his reaction where everybody's saying that he's really good is just the typical thing where every time any character comes out, he's broken. That's what people say on the internet to get the clicks and the engagements. Or if he's just kind of like an average character like Hero ended up being, you know, where Hero is still quite silly and quite crazy, but, you know, he's not like a dominating character like Joker is.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of people saying now they feel like he's like a mid-tier character, but they're just basing that off the fact that he's really slow, and they say that there's no good slow characters in Smash history almost at all. But, you know, I just saw a video earlier of him today where he can, like, literally camp under the stage. He can, like, and he can keep attacking off the ledge while also mining to get more materials and could just keep basically going back and forth underneath the stage because of the block building mechanic that he has. And, you know, there's just a lot of silly things that he can do like that that really, I don't know, I appreciate what they're able to do with Smash from a design perspective, where they can make so many characters so unique and interesting and give them elements of gameplay that is so unorthodox that you just have to stand back and appreciate that the thought that even goes into that and how you make that work in a fighting game. But I think at the same time, what it usually does is it breeds a lot of gimmicky mechanics and gameplay where, you know, you're relying on, you know, silly things in order to get a win, or, you know, in this case, he can pretty much just stall somebody out. You know, he can get the lead and, you know, could just like hide under the stage essentially. And I don't know, there's just things like that that I just worry about with the way that they design a lot of these characters. And that's why I really, you know, aside from the fact that I want Crash and Rayman to get in, just because I love those characters and I think they're really deserving, I think it's also because I don't think you'd have to worry about any silly shenanigans like that with either of those characters. I mean, maybe Rayman with the fact that he can fire his fists across the stage, but, you know, I don't know. I just want a more grounded character. You know, that's why I think Crash would probably be the best, is he's not going to do any silly stuff like that that would just be odd to see in a fighting game. And I'm glad that they're able to make it work in Smash, but I think there's so many things Steve does that you're just like, man, like, it's just, I don't know, it's just, it's like the way he can edge guard, for example. I think that's just so counterintuitive to what that game's about, you know? Like, I don't know, it just, it seems ridiculous. I don't even know how to articulate that.
Yeah, it's weird from a marketing sense with the Fighter's Pass as well, because you can't conceivably be great with all these characters. I mean, for, you know, most people who don't play the game for a living, you know, every character is just so different that it's like kind of painful to play matches. Like, I remember when Joker came out and he just works differently than most characters, and it made me not really want to play him. Like, I don't care about the character. I don't really like Persona. And so I just did not care to put the time in, to, you know, get even decent at playing him. Same thing with Dragon Quest guy, same thing with what's his name, Terry, same thing with Min Min. You know, they're all just so vastly different and require, I mean, Min Min, like, will scramble your brain on how Super Smash Bros. Works, because half of her moves are just throwing a punch. And you know, as someone who's played a lot of Smash and a lot of ARMS, it confuses me to no end whenever I pick up Min Min. And then, like, I'm just not big on traditional fighting games, so I'm not even going to try to learn all the Terry inputs. I accidentally, you know, kickflip off the stage all the time when I play with him. And, yeah, it's just kind of weird. It's like a bundle package that you buy, and, like, you know, you're just rolling the dice on whether you'll be able to click with the characters or not. And I think some more vanilla characters would be great, you know, or like, the gimmick that they have isn't, you know, this crazy thing to wrap your head around. Like, you know, Banjo's gimmick is that he's got a side B and he's like mildly invincible when he does it, but vulnerable to grabs. It's like, okay, I can grasp that. And he's still kind of a hard character to play just with his tool set, but you can wrap your brain around it. Everyone else, I mean, I practiced Steve for a couple hours the night before we played and recorded because I wanted to make sure that I wasn't just going to be, like, you know, awful with him. But even so, it's like, you know, once other people learn the matchup, it's tough for you to keep winning when you don't know all the strange quirks of the character. And it's been interesting to see, you know, how he's shaken up the place. But yeah, I do think that is one of the weaknesses of the fighter pass. But I don't know if I'd change it at the same time, because I do like the unique elements that each character has. I mean, even some of the base roster characters, like King K. Rool having the belly armor gimmick. I mean, I think that's probably a smarter one as well, where it's like, okay, so these handful of moves K. Rool can use and have, like, special stun frames on them. You know, that's like a gimmick that is a little easier to wrap your head around. But similarly, the first time you fight a K. Rool, if you don't really know what you're doing, you're going to get clapped. And, you know, that's just what's weird about this game, is that it's very matchup heavy in how you play the game. But yeah, I don't know if I'd change it either, because I really do love the way that Steve feels and plays. And, you know, just, I don't know. It's it's really weird.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's not that I don't appreciate the unique perspective that there are, the unique way that they're able to develop some of these characters. I just think it just becomes frustrating because, you know, like I said, and maybe I need to stop looking at it through the scope of a competitive fighting game, because that's not really what it is. But I just think it's annoying when you could go from fighting, you know, if I'm DK and I fight Captain Falcon, I'm like, that's fun. And then I go and I fight Snake and I'm like, okay, that's not fun. And then I fight Pac-Man and that's not fun. And then I fight Mewtwo and it's like, okay, that's fun. And then you fight someone like Steve, and there's just so many different things you have to prepare for. And depending on the character you're playing, it's either going to be fun or it's not going to be fun at all, unless you're just playing a top tier character. And I don't know, that aspect of the game just kind of, you know, annoys me sometimes, I guess. But, you know, it's still cool from a design perspective.
Yeah, and they'll probably tweak Steve. He was one of the characters that came out much later, and so they didn't have as much of a chance to play test him. And so I imagine, I mean, they're gonna have to patch the weird glitch where he sends people through the middle of the stage, a la Mewtwo in Melee, but much worse. So they're going to have to patch him in some sense, and I imagine they'll make tweaks to him. I just think, you know, some of his smash attack should be slow, like his forward smash should be slower. That's really, like, the biggest change I would make to him, is that sometimes when I've finally gotten in on a Steve, they can just thwap me with a diamond sword and take me out at, like, 90%. It's like, if it's going to be that strong, it should be slower. But yeah, I think a couple tweaks and he won't be so bad. But yeah, very matchup focused. I think he's going to bully certain characters and get bullied by others. You know, those fast characters that can keep up with him and you know, prevent him from mining or even being able to craft a weapon are going to give him a lot of trouble. And there's, you know, having a quick reaction, there's not much that he's going to be able to do. But But yeah, very, very interesting inclusion. He came with the Minecraft stage that has a bunch of different biomes that you can use based on different button combinations. You just kind of, like, search out online where to see that. But I like that that they have all that variety inside of a single stage. And the music that they included, even though it's not from the original Minecraft game, is pleasing. And the spirit battles were pretty fun. I had a fun time with, now that they let you do the four player spirit battles, we tackled those and had a good time with it. All in all, I'm glad Steve's in, and I hope that that our other characters get in. Now we'll end the podcast on this. What's the next four characters you're thinking? Who do you think is going to get in next?
Well, there's speculation going on because Sakurai just tweeted out a picture of the day about 2 clocks, and a lot of people are saying Crash Bandicoot. It's about time. So that would be awesome. But yeah, I'm still going with, man, I really do think Crash and Rayman are both getting in. I mean, I think even the Ubisoft stuff, I mean, I sent you and Trevor some stuff, but there was even somebody who worked with Ubisoft that said that they have had conversations with Nintendo about Rayman being included. So I'm pretty confident that's going to happen, especially because he got all those trademarks that are very similar to the ones Banjo got. They're almost identical before he became a character. So I just look at that, and then Ubisoft's good faith with Nintendo. You know, I just think there's too much going for them to not include at least somebody from Ubisoft, and I don't think anyone makes more sense than Rayman. And then kind of the same thing with Crash Bandicoot, you know, hearing about that rumor about the 5-year plan with Crash, and one of those things was getting Crash and Smash. And I know Activision would love to find more ways to make Crash Bandicoot more popular, so I think him as well. And then the other two characters, I hate to say it, but I feel like that Ryu Hayabusa will probably be a character, even though I don't really have any interest in him being one. And then Geno, you know, just because Geno hasn't shown up as a Mii costume yet, even though Lloyd hasn't either, but I'm hoping it's not Lloyd, and I'm hoping it's Geno, even though I don't really have too much of an interest in Geno either. Even though it's like a cool character, I feel like he's, you know, he's one character in one game, and a very, very old game, and on top of that, it's another Mario character, which there's already more Mario characters than anything in Smash. I mean, Piranha Plant was one of the DLC characters, so we technically already got a Mario character through DLC, so from that perspective, I don't really want Geno. I'd like it to be somebody else, but I feel like he's going to be a character, just because Sakurai said he would have liked to include him, I think, back in Brawl as well, because he felt like he'd be a cool character, so... but those are the four I'm going to roll with. Although I think Doomslayer would be awesome. I'd replace Ryu Hayabusa with him. But knowing Sakurai, I would expect Ryu Hayabusa more because he seems more interested in that, like, anime, you know, sword character style rather than something like Doomslayer.
Yeah, I could have seen Doomslayer before, but... seeing now how they represent these characters so closely to how they function in their games, I don't think there's a way to do Doomslayer properly and make him appropriate for the game, you know, especially because of just how they've continued to brand Doom in the Eternal and the 2016 reboot of the game. You know, it's very visceral, very gory. And I just don't think that there's going to be a way to do that in Smash that would fit. And, you know, you would say that, well, Snake's gotten in and Joker's from an M-rated game, but there's different ways that they've sort of kept the style of those characters without invoking a higher age rating on the game, you know, including Bayonetta. But I just don't know if there's a good way to hide what Doom is and make it feel like Doom, especially from the lens of how they've been doing DLC characters this time around. Because Snake and Sonic, I mean, if they were made as part of one of these fighter passes, they'd be entirely different characters. And the fact of the matter is that they're spending a lot more time and effort on these characters than they ever did inside of the base release for those third-party characters. You know, like when Ryu came in, they re-encoded like the entire way that the character works to make that function. And I think that the way that they would want to represent Doom, I don't think it would work. At the same time, there is that perspective leak that hasn't necessarily been disproven with a Kako Demon hat on a Mii fighter. I can see Doomslayer getting in as a deluxe Mii costume, but I don't know. I'd honestly think at this point, it's Master Chief would be more likely than Doomslayer, just with how buddy-buddy Microsoft and Nintendo have been with these previous character packs.
Well, that's the funny thing with that unproven leak that is still out there. A lot of people just assume that means because there's a Mallow costume and a Kako Demon costume, that means Doomslayer and Geno would be characters. But who's to say that Geno and Doomslayer wouldn't just also be Mii costumes with that? Like, I mean...
Yeah, that could be the case. And, you know, you would think the more interesting thing to leak would be the character, not the costumes. But I'm not going to pretend to get into the mind of people who know things. But I do know that one of the like pure legitimate leaks that we got before the game came out was a model of Ken taunting. And it was Ken. It wasn't like a Ken costume or some hint at Ken. It, like, you know, usually people are looking to leak the real juicy bits, but who knows? Maybe at that point the Mii costumes were being made first because they decided on the fighter cast, but, you know, are able to obviously make the Mii costumes a lot faster. You know, we'll see. But yeah, I don't know. Like, character prediction wise, they had to have had a conversation about putting Rayman in this game, and I don't know why it hasn't happened, but I think because it hasn't happened, I don't see him getting into this fighter's pass. I do see Crash Bandicoot. I mean, there's been some speculation on internal Activision meetings where they had Crash's inclusion in Super Smash Bros. As a like big roadmap to marketing the character. Classic characters mean a lot to the Smash franchise. We got Mega Man in his original iteration. Pac-Man is his original iteration instead of the that ghastly new version of Pac-Man that they use for the TV show that has a voice and blue eyes. And so I think classic characters really matter. You know, Banjo got in, Hero got a bunch of different iterations. And so I think Crash is going to make his way into the game. I'm honestly starting to see the Master Chief getting in. But you know, besides that, I really don't have an idea. I would hope Rayman and Geno would fill those other spots, but I do think Geno's getting in, but for that fourth slot, I'm really not sure. I could see Hayabusa getting in. I could see them putting some obscure Xenoblade character no one asked for.
You have to go.
I could see them doing another Fire Emblem.
You have to go look at all the stuff that Rayman has going for him, and I think it'd surprise you because I used to think that Rayman probably didn't have much of a chance, but you just have to also think that Ubisoft they actually developed models for Rayman and Globox to include in Smash 4, and so I think there's a lot of like. They're like one of the only non-Japanese companies that Sakurai seems to have a actual personal relationship with to a certain degree. So I'd just be shocked. And the fact that there's Assassin's Creed Mii costume, a Rabbids Mii costume, but no Rayman thing. Like, you would just think, come on, man. Like, of all things, you would have something Rayman related as a Mii costume.
And I am shocked.
But that's what I'm
saying.
I'm shocked
he wasn't in Smash 4. I'm shocked that he wasn't in the base game of Ultimate. I'm shocked that he wasn't in the first DLC pack. And it's like all those things compounding. And I'm like, I guess someone just accidentally deleted all the Rayman files and they don't want to make it again. Because he should be in the game. He should be in the game more than any other third-party character. He was there in the base game of Smash 4, just keeping it real in the trophy section before anybody. He should be in the game, but why is he not in the game? I have no idea. I have no idea. Yeah. I mean, and Ubisoft has a very rich relationship with Nintendo. They supported them out of the gate within the Wii U. They have been trusted with the Mario franchise. They've been trusted with Star Fox, and no Rayman. I don't know, man.
But that's why I'm saying.
I have no idea why he's in the game.
But just think about everything you just said, and you think that no Ubisoft character is going to get in? Because my whole thing is there's going to be a Ubisoft character. Like, I just would be stunned if there wasn't. I feel like it would almost be a slap in the face to them for all the things that they've done for Nintendo, but who else from Ubisoft? I mean, like, Prince of Persia? No way. Assassin's Creed character? Maybe, but I don't think they would do that.
No.
I honestly think, like, Rayman is, like, the... It's so obvious, it's not even funny. And like I said, there's a really credible source. I'll have to send you the link again, but it's somebody that worked for Ubisoft or worked for Nintendo. I can't remember, but they basically confirmed that, like, you know, there have been conversations about Rayman being included in Smash. And I just, like I said, I just think when you weigh all of the stuff you just said, it would just be shocking not to get any character from Ubisoft. And, you know, Rayman's the only one that makes a ton of sense. Like, I honestly think he's way more of a shoo-in than Crash is. Because I could just see Activision being really unreasonable about what type of deal they want. But also just the fact that Crash is so American and, I don't know, I could just see Sakurai not really being interested in making that happen. But yeah, well, I really hope both of them get in.
We got to have one character created in America out of the, you know, almost 100 character roster of Ultimate. We got to have one created in America. And don't tell me Dark Samus, because Dark Samus is just Samus in a black suit. That I'm
well, that's
I'm
not
only taking,
what Dark Samus is, but yes.
I know, but I'm only taking half credit for, like, the, I mean, it is a very derivative design, but we don't have not a single character from the biggest games market in the world and home of a lot of the biggest publishers in the world. No American character. It's interesting. I think we need one. Just give us Crash. We'll be happy. I'll quiet down until Smash 10, and then it's time for another one. But just give me Crash, and I'll be quiet until Smash 10.
Yeah, well, I honestly think both of them are going to get in, and I just think when there's a lot of people who feel like it's either going to be Crash or Rayman. I'm like, to think that, like, that's how people look at DLC inclusions now, is that if it's some non-serious platforming character that's mascot worthy, that, like, there's only one that can get in. And I just find that so funny, because I'm like, there was like 3 to 4 JRPG anime style characters in the first Fighter Pass, and so don't tell me that only one platforming mascot character can get in. Like, I just think that's silly. So I really feel like both of those characters are gonna get in, and I'd be really happy if they do.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, but also at this point, like, I was happy with the Ultimate roster before the DLC characters came. Getting Banjo was a dream come true, and, you know, I'm also very emotionally removed, because I'm quite happy with the roster, and the only other character that I really, really wanted in is an assist trophy and Shovel Knight. So unless you're gonna, you know, bring Shovel Justice to my boy and make him a fully playable character, which you should do, then you know, I'm kind of emotionally out of it already. I'm happy, but seriously, why is Shovel Knight not a character? Come on now, that'd be another U.S. character, a Kickstarter success story, one of the biggest indie characters around. Come on now, Minecraft isn't indie anymore. It's owned by one of the biggest corporations in the world. Anyway. Shovel Justice will be delivered one day, Matthew. One day.
Yeah, we'll see.
All right, well, that's going to be the end of this episode of We the People. Thank you so much for tuning in. Leave us a nice review on iTunes or your podcasting service of choice, if you will. That would help us out a great deal. Otherwise, have a great week. Enjoy your Nintendo Switch. And make sure not to shield against the minecart when you're playing against Steve, because you'll get trapped in it and fall to your doom. Don't do that. Jump. Okay? All right. See you next time.